Yeah? All right. I'm going to call the meeting to order, this town hall to order. If you would all please rise and join me in the salute to the flag. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Thank you very much. We do have a quorum of the board here, as well as a number of members of both the Standing Infrastructure and Finance Committees. Director Wharton will be joining us in about 45 minutes or so. What we're going to do is, first we're going to have a presentation that lays some of the foundation for the rates, which is talking about the infrastructure needs. And that's going to be made by our district engineer, Bob Gressens. And then we will. Then we have a PowerPoint from our rate consultant, Mr. Handler. And then we will have questions. If you have a question while the presentations are happening, if you would please hold it so that we can get through the presentation and then we'll ask the questions. This microphone isn't here for just because it likes to be in the front. That is where you should go so that you can ask your questions so that it can be recorded for AGP and so that people can hear you, what your question is. Does anybody have any questions before we start? Mr. Beringer. It's more open house, and you know, I just ask everybody to be polite and respectful that other people might have questions. But yeah, it's definitely more open. Yes, and just so everybody's clear, Director Beringer and I are the ad hoc rates committee, and so we were involved in helping put this together, so we may be able to answer some questions also. And unlike Director Beringer, you should always approach the mic so that we can hear what you have to say. Yes. Can you come to them so we can hear you? Thank you.
Hi, my name is Rose Bedard. My question, is there a mandatory reserve percentage?
Right now, we do not have. We have some goals set, but we don't have a mandatory policy of mandatory reserve amount.
Okay, thank you.
Yes, could you, so that we can hear you?
It's about the microphone. So the reason it's here, we're so that it can be seen here.
Yes.
On the screen, correct?
Yes.
Okay. Not too.
Yes, that is correct. For the edification of the audience, yes. All right, Mr. Gressens is our district engineer, and he's going to give us a presentation on the infrastructure. Welcome.
Thank you, Madam President. I have a very brief PowerPoint just to outline some of the CIP projects that we've been talking about in the primarily the Standing Infrastructure Committee meetings, and also a little bit in the Finance Committee meetings. So that's been a real productive process, and I will get going on this PowerPoint here. Just to give you a quick idea of what this involves, what I've been doing is mainly working on these summary sheets, which show all our projects, and coordinating that with our budget, and also coordinate with what Mr. Handler is going to talk about on the rates. So it's kind of three areas that we have to coordinate as staff. And so this is just going to talk about the CIP portion. So let me give you a little background here. Hopefully I hit the right button here.
What is CIP?
Capital Improvement Program can also mean Capital Improvement Project. So a Capital Improvement Program has several projects to it. Sorry, Bob, would you mind advancing that? I can't seem to hit the right button here. Thank you. So as a background, we've listed CIP projects. These were developed over multiple years to determine the the financing and timing of projects. Thank you. And again, the projects were identified based on numerous discussions over the years with operating staff, as well as prior to the standing committee, we had a ad hoc infrastructure committee, which was Director Farmer and Director Behringer were on those. So we've been having a lot of meetings on these. We've received some excellent input. There's been some great questions raised by a number of you who are here today that are on those committees or have attended those committee meetings. And so I'm just going to give you a very brief overview of what those are for the water, wastewater, and sustainable water facility. So next slide, Bob. Thank you. So we have several priorities that we show on the list, 1 through 4. One is the highest, 4 is the lowest. And so we assign those. They're all subject to future revision. A level 1 is typically the most urgently needed. It's mandated by a law, a regulation, or a safety need. Level 2, the next level down, are generally needed to improve operational efficiencies that will save on cost, including labor, and that may include replacing worn-out equipment, which we have a lot of. Level 3, they can more conserve or protect assets, and they may enhance reliability, but they have a little lower return on investment, and they may take more years to pay back. Level 4 are more anticipatory future project needs. I don't think we have any right now, so we're just at 1 through 3 at this point. Next slide, Bob. Oh, first of all, the abbreviations. That's on the next slide. Thank you. I must have decided not to show it. Sorry. I have abbreviations in some of the detailed sheets that I'd be glad to get into for those who want to get into details, but I thought for purposes here I'd keep it just brief and not go through those since it's not showing up on these remaining slides. So a summary of wastewater projects. We have 23 wastewater treatment plant project needs identified. We have 22 collection system projects identified. Those are things like the lift stations and pipes and manholes that are out in the system for our sanitary sewer system. We have 3 vehicle and trailer mounted equipment projects. One's fairly substantial, which is a Vactor truck, and I can talk about that if you'd like. We have 1 overhead project that's related to a new finance software. Not including the maintenance projects over the total time frame, which was roughly fiscal year 18-19 through fiscal year 26-27, we have about $8.9 million in project needs identified. For our budget, we had to split the fiscal year in half. So we have right now the first half, we have $195,000 in pretty critical project needs identified, and then subject to any potential rate increase, the second half can have up to $864,000 in project needs. Again, that's all subject to the 218 process. When we sort by priority levels under wastewater, we have $2.16 million identified over that period of time. We have $4.52 million in priority 2 and $2.06 million in priority 3 projects. Get the next slide for water. Thank you, Bob. Under the water CIP program, we have 15 water distribution system projects that we identified, 1 water treatment project, 4 vehicle and trailer mounted equipment projects, and 1 overhead project. The total for FY18-19 through 27-28 comes to about $6 million. Again, we split the fiscal year 18-19 in half in our work. We have the first half at about $248,700, and then this is still in the draft budget if it gets approved by the board later this month. But that includes things like replacing a dump truck, a trailer-mounted vacuum excavator, air compressor, water meters, plus some other needed priority one projects. The second half is about close to the same as $253,000. Completing those second half fiscal year projects is all subject, again, to the 218 process. Again, when we add for all the planned future projected years, for water, we have a priority one at $1.47 million, priority two at $2.66 million, and priority three at $1.83 million. And And then lastly, the SWF projects. I did a similar summary for that. We have two projects proposed for supporting our regular coastal development permit process. Next slide, please. Thank you. So we have two projects planned to support the regular coastal development permit process. We have two projects to support off-hauling of RO concentrate. We have an interim and a long-term. And then we have three advanced water treatment plant projects proposed, four long-term projects to improve upon reliability, and two projects to support the closure of the surface water impoundment. So some of the projects, especially the long-term projects, may end up getting funded through an existing Army Corps Prop 84, it's Water Resource Development Act grant that we have. It's been languishing, it's been on the books for a long time with the Army Corps, but essentially we worked a credit out with them for local share, and they have a federal match, so it's pretty well 100% covered. But we have to be really careful on how we design and come up with the specifics of the project so it still meets the original grant requirements. So that's out there. And some of the projects I've shown listed in the details are solar array energy producing facility, the future off hauling station, again for the RO concentrate, and there may be some others, but it's all subject to the Army Corps of Engineers review and approval process. So we still have to have those meetings. The management needs to meet with the Army Corps and reinitiate that old project that's been sitting there on their books. For FY18-19, we have total SWF projects totaling $265,000. The latter years, again, are subject to the pending discussions with the Army Corps, so I didn't try to prioritize those and add those up because it's still needs to be determined on how much they're going to fund. The remaining work we have, next slide, Bob. Near term, we need to continue to seek the committee input and consensus and any updates to the CIP as needed. Coordinate, of course, with the 218 process and discuss the risk from not proceeding. We had a little brief discussion at the last finance committee on that, but there are risks from not proceeding on this, and they include safety, you know, to both our employees and the public. There's public health concerns, there's environmental impact concerns, there's inefficiency in the operations, there's potential for regulatory fines, and then employee turnover because people don't like to be working with, you know, basically baling wire and duct tape on some of the stuff to keep it running. They get frustrated. So long term, we have to further strategize and define how projects should be completed. For example, the wastewater treatment plant can be completed as one larger project where you might have to get some funding, or else you spread it out and do several smaller projects. So we're having some discussions in that at the infrastructure and finance committee levels. I'd suggest that we value engineer and update what's been proposed in an earlier 10% design on the wastewater treatment plant, and then determine the best means to fund the projects. And again, that's cash flow, borrow, and that sort of discussion. So that pretty well completes my my PowerPoint, because I don't want to take away from Alex's time. And if you have any questions for me on that brief overview, I'd be glad to answer.
If you have a question, please come up to the microphone, and we'll get these questions. Yeah.
I have a question. I think it was on the page, two pages back, on it was on the SWF. If you can go back a couple, next to last page, I believe. It was on CDP. It was the top line of that page before the last
one. To support
the
regular CDP?
We'll get that slide up in just a second.
Yeah. If you can find that. It should have a cost associated with that without the Army Corps being involved, because that's involving what it's going to cost to get the CDP done. I wouldn't think,
okay,
are you including the Army Corps?
Like.
Are you including the Army Corps in that particular?
No, I could give you the cost.
So I just wondered about, the cost.
Just give me a second to look it up on my detailed sheet. I didn't want to, these wouldn't show up very good in slides. So for the, coastal development permit. So we have a regular coastal development permit. The sustainable water facility was built under an emergency coastal development permit, and the county requires that you get a regular coastal development permit after it's constructed. So that's what we're doing. And the two projects that are related to supporting that, we have a little EIR consulting work with one of our consultants, who's Rita Garcia primarily. She's been a project manager on that from the get-go, so we are involving her at a nominal amount. That's about $10,000 for the year for her support. And then we had started a Section 7 Endangered Species Act consultation process with Cindy Cleveland Biological Services. That was approved, I think, was it the last board meeting, Jerry? And so that was we rounded it up to about $125,000 for that. So those are the two that are related to the regular coastal development permit. Does that answer your question? Okay.
All right. Crosby?
I had a follow-on question on that same slide. You're giving the total number of items for each capital improvement project, but if you could just give us a quick summary of what those were specifically.
Sure. Bob, is it possible to restart that and go to the two slides before the end there? It should say summary of SWF projects at the top. I think it's maybe, let's say slide 7. Next one. There you go. I think that's the slide we're talking about. Okay, so let me, so the, besides the ones I just mentioned, the two projects to support off-hauling to RO concentrate, I have an interim one that's identified at approximately $50,000 for the current half of this fiscal year. That would allow us to haul the RO concentrate to like the South County Sanitation District outfall instead of using the impoundment basin. Then I have a future project, which may be next year or the year after, that's $200,000 estimated for a permanent facility so that we have permanent pipes and tanks. We're just going to use some rented equipment and a little bit of some electrical control work to do the interim facility. So just trying to keep that cost as low as possible. So that's what those two are for. Then the advanced water treatment plant, again, this requires coordination with the Army Corps, but the operators in the past have asked for some kind of either a pole barn or something to go over the facility to protect the equipment better. A lot of it's exposed to the outside, and there's like LCD displays that are kind of getting faded from the sun and so forth. So that was one of the projects. Again, it might get picked up by the Army Corps. And then we had some minor miscellaneous instrumentation for some upgrading, including a new flow meter on that on the effluent pipe. We had some monitoring software that we'd like to add to that project to help us with the regular monitoring that's required on it, and installation of remote sensing equipment that is not that critical. I think that's a priority level 3. So these range from priority level 1s to 3, but those are the four advanced water treatment plant projects we have on this list. Then we have long-term improvement modifications. These are related to the proposed modifications identified in the environmental impact report, and they're pushed out way back. They may not occur unless we get some Army Corps funding or something of that, but we didn't include these in the rate analysis, but they are listed as a surface water treatment plant that could take water and store it in the impoundment basin once it's emptied, so we could reuse that impoundment basin and take advantage of some stored water during the month of August when our wells are at their lowest level. There's a pipeline from well San Simeon SS1 over to that surface water treatment plant. Right now we have to shut off the well SS1 when there's surface water flowing within 150 feet of that well because it doesn't have filtration. So the thought was, let's get a pipeline from that well over to the new surface water treatment plant. There's the conversion of the actual impoundment for storing water from ground, and that includes a small pump station and some connecting pipelines. And then we have the solar array system listed in that category, too, that I mentioned earlier, that would help offset power cost. And that that's within the grant. It's identified in the Army Corps grant. And then we had a couple of minor projects. We had one to help us with the anything dealing with the closure plan implementation. If we have to haul much water off for that process or cleaning up that pond once it gets empty, we had a little money in there for that. And then that's about it. If we had a little bit dealing with the flood damage follow-up, and I think that's related to renting the equipment, as I remember. So that's the summary.
I have a question. On the SWF projects, it sounds like some of them aren't included in the rates. Are any of them included in the potential rates?
I know that, and I'll let Alex speak to this too, but the EIR consulting work and the Section 7 ESA is definitely in the rates. And then maybe, Alex, you can remind me of the other portions that are in your rate analysis.
Yeah, we've got about $500,000 included over the next two fiscal years to address the highest priority near-term needs. After that, we've only got $50,000 a year into these rates here. As Bob mentioned, some of these longer-term projects out there, there may be some grant eligibility, so that's really the district's focus. So those are not baked into the rates as they are. If we go out 3 years and it turns out you have to do one of these projects and the grants aren't there, you'll cross that bridge when you get there. But some of these long-term projects are not quite the priority that the near-term stuff is. So, yeah, thank you for mentioning we excluded those from the rates because I assume that would be a question folks had.
Thank you for your presentation. Are there any other questions yeah, please. Make sure you say your name so that we get everybody.
Don Howell. One thing that you could help me with is, what is it meant by a 10% design study?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, or 80% design, what are we talking about?
A 10% design study is just a little bit past the conceptual level when you're designing something. And what we had is, we had Corello Engineers do that. And it was a negotiated settlement stemming back to some sanitary sewer overflows that occurred back in 2011. We had three overflows. We were fined for that. The water board agreed to split the cost of the fine, provided we put money into figuring out what needs to be done at the wastewater plant. So what they did for 10% design is they came up with some basic drawings, and then they had some specifications for like the major pieces of equipment that they showed, and some preliminary or planning level cost estimates that go along with that. So they kind of laid it out, and but it's not at a point where you'd go out for bid. You'd have to go further in the design to really define that further. So that's why I've asked to do a value engineering on that, because a lot of things have changed since they completed that report, and we might be able to potentially reduce the cost through a value engineering effort some.
Thank you. That clarifies, because it was language I simply didn't understand.
You're certainly welcome.
Let's see, while we're still on the supposedly sustainable water facility, which I'm going to refer to by the name which was known when I did not object to the rates, that is to say, can the EWS, the emergency water supply, be run now should the board declare a stage three? And if not, what would need to be done just for that, just for an emergency and nothing more? How much money and what still remains to be done just for that?
Yeah, sure.
Okay.
Yes. The quick answer is yes. But it had to be a stage three emergency declaration, as you mentioned. What we would do, again, to keep the capital investment down, is use two tanks that we already have rented. We call them Baker tanks. We could use one of those tanks to store water from the advanced water treatment plant. That is the RO reject water. And we could continue to use the other one for purposes of hauling off anything that's remaining in that impoundment basin. So we might have to do a little slight piping mod to the inlet to those two tanks. That's PVC piping, so it should be pretty simple to do. Mm-hmm. Then we have a little bit of hoses to put on the front end of it. And then what I propose to use is an existing 6-inch pump that we have that's diesel-powered to park there, hook up to hoses, and pump into the trucks that go. Oh. So keep it minimal. The unknown I have right now on that cost is related to the electrical controls and the float switches and so forth, and making sure we have the right interlocks in there. So I'm hoping we come in below that $50,000 estimate, but there's still some more discussion to take place on that. Then there's the hauling cost that would relate to that if it went into operation. That would be the disposal fee, which I think is 11 cents per gallon at the South County mm-hmm. Sanitation District outfall. And then there'd be the truck hauling cost.
So would it be correct to say that should we get a serious, if we don't get any rain for another 4 months, we're running out of water, is it possible the plant can be turned on without completing the CDP? Mm-hmm.
Yes.
I see nodding.
Yes.
So this effort to go to the SWF from the EWS, there's a lot of expense which we really don't need for the emergency supply.
I'll leave you to your opinion.
Okay, that's
on
my
that.
Opinion on that. What you've just told me is the $125,000 that's being proposed probably isn't necessary if we kept it only as an emergency. Now, I may be wrong, but that's the impression I'm getting from what I'm hearing. Last question. I really didn't mean to offer so much in the way of opinions, but on the first, when you were talking about the CIP for the wastewater, which is where you mentioned that, I wanted to know, of the way you had it grouped, how many dollar amount of the wastewater projects are of priority one wastewater projects are in the budget now? In other words, how much more do we need in the budget for priority one for this fiscal?
Sure.
And how much is already budgeted?
Yeah. I should have that on my list here. Just give me a minute to try to locate it.
I'm hearing from the general manager just two from the budget this year. The handrails and influence screen.
Right, but I heard your question a little different from that. Maybe you can correct me, but as I answer, we have $195,000 for the first half of fiscal year 18-19, which is hand railings at the two sludge digesters, which is a urgently needed safety requirement to protect their operators.
Those are priority one, right?
And then we have the influence screen installation at $150,000. Right. Now, for the second half, and again, it's subject to, the 218 process, the priority one projects amount to $253,000.
That was kind of what I was getting at.
That's what I thought you meant.
Thank you. Thanks.
Okay, sure. You're welcome.
I'd like some clarification on the cost to have that installed, $150,000?
We're going to have that on the agenda next week, and it's not related to the rates directly because it's already in the budget to cover that
cost. It shouldn't be anywhere near that. Do we have more than one bid?
I want to stick
to
the...
It's out to bid right now.
That's part of the finance.
Well, it's not in the rates.
Then if it's out to bid, there shouldn't be a stated $150,000 cost that Mr. Greshens has referred to.
It's an estimate.
It's an estimate.
And I want to stick to what's in the rates and the influence.
We're paying for it, the Director Rice. We're paying for it.
I agree. And
all right.
It is going to be
it's
on
the
agenda.
It's all part of the package. Thank you.
But it's not in the proposed rates because it's already in the budget.
And we'll hopefully get some good bids. I mean, we're trying to reduce the cost by about 50% versus what we had before on the bid, before we redesigned it. So, okay.
Thank you, Mr. Greshens.
You're welcome. Thank you.
I'd like to introduce everybody to Mr. Alex Handlers from Bartow Wells. He is our consultant for the rate study that we have undertaken. And again, if you would hold your questions, write them down or whatever you need to do so that he can make his presentation, and then we'll take questions. And we'll do it the same way. Bring yourself up to the front. I am going to take the folks that gave me slips at the very start first after he finishes his presentation, and then we'll take all comers to the microphone.
And I'll just say, is this on?
No. There you go.
Now it's on. Okay. after this session's over, we go through stuff and questions. You know, I'm happy to hang out for as long as folks want. If they have additional questions or want to see some of the detail, happy to go through that. Okay, so this presentation is similar to the one I was just here a couple of weeks ago or so. I'm going to keep it a little bit briefer. Want to kind of hit the key points and then, you know, leave adequate time for folks to ask questions, get into details, and I'll see if I can get this. It doesn't seem to be working. Okay. Was that you who did it? Oh, okay. Okay. Let me just move on past here. We'll go to the next slide, next slide. You know, background, we just wanted to show folks where you're starting compared to other regional coastal agencies with kind of a typical residential bill. You can see Cambria's bill is on the far left there. This is for a customer using 6 units, 600 cubic feet. 100 cubic feet is about 750 gallons. Works out to be about 75 gallons per day. So 6 units on a bi-monthly basis, about 3 units per month. That's relatively low for a typical home compared to other agencies I work with in other areas of the state. But compared to other coastal communities, we see a lot of coastal communities that you don't have as much outdoor irrigation watering going on. There's been a lot more water supply issues with coastal communities. So this is not all that far off with other coastal communities. But you can see your rates are, you know, on the low side compared to these other agencies. You do need rate increases, in my mind, for both water, sewer, and to some degree the sustainable water facility or emergency water supply. At the same time, a lot of these other agencies are also facing rate increases. I know Avila Beach is in the process of a multi-year rate increase. Morro Bay, I'm working with right now, they're in the middle of a multi-year rate increase, and they're dealing with the need to build an entirely new wastewater treatment plant. They're not allowed to rebuild it at its current location. So they're looking at a project, you know, in excess of $100 million for their community. Los Osos already went through something similar to that. Cayucos had to rebuild it, build their own treatment plan in recent years as well. So we're expecting upward pressure on rates, substantially so for some of these other communities out there. Even with the proposed rate increases, we think you'll end up on the lower end. Still, that's no consolation for folks. Nobody likes to pay more than they currently are. We understand that. And moving on, you know, just the brief background is that the water and sewer utilities here are funded almost exclusively from the rate revenues. The property taxes that are out there mostly fund fire, things like that. There's not a big pot of property taxes available for water and sewer. So like most agencies, the rates at the end of the day have got to be adequate to fund all the financial needs, including the operations and the capital projects. And that's really what the biggest driver of these proposed rates here is. It's mostly on the capital, the infrastructure side. You just got a lot of old infrastructure, a lot of projects that here in the coastal conditions are operating well past their operating life. Bob can go into more details if you have more project questions. And you need to fund these things, and you can't just keep kicking them down the road. It's kind of like you have a car, the tires are bald, you can't keep driving on it for very long, and you're kind of at that stage with a lot of facilities. I remember seeing some of the pictures that Jerry had up here maybe a few years ago of stuff rusted out. The pump stations that you have, the motor pumps, they're just not going to last you 20 years like they might in an inland, drier community. However, yours are, they have been lasting that long because you're having stuff operate probably longer than it should. Moving on to the next slide, a little background on why we're doing rates now. We were just here 3 years ago. We did a rate study. The first thing we started on was a water and wastewater rate study, but then that was right when the drought was hitting, and it became apparent that the immediate priority was the emergency water supply project, sustainable water facility project. The district was running out of water, and there was a real fear that you rely on two underground aquifers that are pretty much, if the water's not flowing, these aquifers are not getting replenished, and if you keep drawing the water down lower and lower, there's the threat of seawater intrusion. So there's real danger of losing the district's water supply. So very quickly, that first rate study was transitioned over to the emergency water supply project to get rates in place to support obtaining that facility and very basic level of operations. At the time those rates were adopted, it was before the project had been bid out. It was before anyone knew the real operating costs. It was all based on preliminary engineering cost estimates. And those rates were adequate to secure funding. However, they weren't adequate to fund what we now know as the operating costs of a couple of years later. And there still need to be some, I'll call, small additional funding needs for that. Then we moved into the water and wastewater rates, which was the intent of the original study. Before this last round of rate increases, for over 20 years, the district had implemented minimal to no rate increases for over a 20-year period. And if you were to adjust those minimal rate increases by inflation, you'd see that there was actually the rates were lower in inflation-adjusted terms than they were in the early 1990s. Now, that's not a recipe for long-term sustainability, because you need small inflationary rate increases each year just to keep the wheels spinning. So I think what happened over a number of years, yes, the district did try to take on the highest priority capital needs, but a lot of needs went unmet. The district tried to operate on a shoestring budget as best it could. And when we came into this last rate study, there was always a balance of competing objectives. We knew there needed to be more capital financing. At the same time, there's always the desire to keep rates as low as possible, and there's always a political this agency here, kudos to folks who are turning up. Sometimes I go to these meetings, and we've got 5 folks in the crowd or 10 folks in the crowd. I went to one once. One person showed up. It was a high school student coming for their civics class. So this is a much more engaged community, and they have been there's been a couple of Prop 218 majority protests that have happened. So yeah, I think the board was kind of weighing where do we go. So the last rates were designed to shore up the financial stability of the water and wastewater enterprises and provide a little level of funding for priority capital needs, understanding we probably have to come back sometime 5 years or less to really address the infrastructure needs. The district has kind of gone through with more of a fine-tooth comb. What are those needs? Try to really identify what the priorities are, and that's where we're at now. We know what those are. The numbers are they're still going through them, trying to hone a little bit here and there. So Bob just sent me even some updated revisions yesterday evening. They're very close to the numbers in these study, but you know, he shaved off, there's a couple hundred thousand out of, you know, 9-10 million on the sewer side, and same on the water side. So the numbers here don't even fully support all the infrastructure needs that the district knows it has. So these minor changes to the CIP are not going to change any of our recommendations. Next slide, water rates. This, you know, I showed at the board meeting last time, just tracking what's happened with the district's water sales over the last, you know, 7-8 years. It used to be your water sales went up and down. This is 2010-11, based on the season. Obviously, in the summer season, there's more tourism, there's more outdoor water use. Water use goes higher, and it's lower in the winter. And that was kind of the norm for a number of years running until 2013 and fiscal year 2013-14. That's after a few years of California drought. It was now declared that, you know, there's a major emergency drought in California. The district declared a stage 3 emergency and imposed some pretty stringent drought rate penalties and limited what people could take, and subsequently, you know, revised those a little bit. But your water use plummeted that year, you know, roughly 40% below where it was before the drought. That's a tremendous cutback, more than we've seen in most agencies in California. Over the last year, now that the drought's been declared over, the penalties are no longer out there, and, you know, the water use bounced up. It's never probably going to bounce up to where it was, but, you know, bounced up about 10% off its drought lows. So that's what we're kind of assuming in our rate study. What does that mean? It means even as the district implemented rate increases, people cut back their water use, so they're purchasing fewer units of water. So a lot of folks, if they were able to conserve, were able to offset the impact of those rate increases to some degree. Still, most people now are probably paying more than they did before due to the level of the rate increases. Next slide. That just kind of shows the same thing. We'll go to the next slide. Currently, when we look at your water enterprise finances, we see that your water enterprise, with the current rates, is generating about $250,000, funding the basic operations, and funding about $250,000 a year for capital needs. that's not as bad as we thought it might be when we were coming to look at these numbers. But what we're finding are a few key challenges. One is the funding needs of the infrastructure on the water side is in excess of this level. As Bob just showed his CIP, over the next 9 years, we're looking at about $6 million of funding needs for infrastructure, and that's in current dollars. You're going to add in some cost inflation. It's going to work out to be, you know, more like $7 million or so. What we built into this rate study is phasing in funding to $700,000 per year. You're not going to get there with the first rate increase or the second rate increase. The hope is you get there by year three, and then you've got a sustainable level of funding to address the district's capital needs over a 10-year period. So these rates aren't even generating enough to fully fund all these high-priority projects over the next 3 years. The next thing I wanted to mention is because of the budgetary situation, the districts try to keep a lid on operating costs for many years, and your water and sewer utilities are current understaffed for a bit. So we did add in a little bit of financing based on the operating needs they need to add. If we go to the next slide, where are we here? Yeah, one new operator, some staffing reallocations, and you know, portion of a cost for a utility manager. But that's kind of a small portion of the increased funding needs that we're seeing. So let's just go to the next slide. We came up with a few scenarios. Last time, I know we only presented one scenario. That's because we had been working through various alternatives, working with the district's committees to come up with what we thought was the kind of a prudent, balanced approach of raising rates. But after we heard at the last meeting, you know, hey, what are some other options? Can we look at some alternatives? We came up with a few alternatives. One is, what if you did all the rate increases up front to get your rates where they need to be to start funding your capital projects right out of the gate? The next is, what if we phased it in over 3 years, recognizing you're going to have to defer some of your projects? We know some of these projects have been deferred before. Maybe you can defer them a few more years as you're phasing in rates. But long term, you need to support reinvestment in the infrastructure. That's part of your long-term operating needs, if you ask me. And you can't do without it any more than you can, you know, not replace a roof on the house every so many years, or change the oil and change the brakes in the car every so often. Then we came up with what I'll call a reduced, phased-in approach. So this doesn't get you to $700,000 a year on the water side. It gets you over 3 years to $500,000. Again, that's even less than maybe what the district's hoping for, but we know there's going to be some kind of balance here of the competing objectives. So those are the kind of three scenarios we looked at. We try to phase in the funding as gradually as possible in scenarios B and C, and the thoughts were that the district would take 3 years of rate increases at this time of action, understanding you're going to come back and reevaluate in a few years. And if things turn out better than we're currently anticipating, for example, if water use is going to go right back to where it was before the drought, well, maybe you don't need to implement these rate increases over 3 years. Maybe you can phase it out over a longer time frame. And yes, there are agencies I've worked with that have done that. One thing I want to point out, water and sewer rates are governed by California constitutional law, Article 13D, Section 6, if anyone wants to look it up. The revenues that come in cannot be used for any other purpose other than water and sewer. So it's not like a city where if they take extra revenues in, they could, you know, use it to fund police and fire. They're not allowed to do that either. But here you've got a district, so you don't even have other things to fund with. But there's constitutional requirements. Water and wastewater revenues can only be used for water and wastewater expenses. So you do have legal protections there. Next slide we'll go to. Yeah, normally I don't like to show things in percentage terms because, you know, the percentage is based on the base. So if someone has a rate of $10 a month and you want to raise it to $20 a month, it's a 100% increase. Whereas another agency might have a sewer rate of $100 a month, they want to raise it to 110, it's only a 10% increase. It's the same dollar increase. So it's the end of the day, it's the dollar impacts, I think, that are most important to folks. But I wanted to show in percentage terms on this slide and show what the associated levels of capital project funding were for these three alternatives. One is if you really try to do everything all up front, you're talking about a 38% rate increase to the water rates to generate, you know, $700,000 per year. For our phased-in approach, We phased it in over 3 years, 16%, 12%, then 6%. And the first year, your cash flows are only generating about $250,000 per year for water for capital needs, then phasing up to $700,000 over 3 years. And then for the reduced phase in approach, this is the one where you're only getting to $500,000 at the end of the year, and you may need to reevaluate and keep moving rates in the right direction. You're talking 13%, 9%, 6%. And keep in mind, this includes the inflationary increases. So if you adjust by inflation, it maybe makes it a little bit less. And the other thing I just wanted to add here, the district last time did adopt 5 years of rate increases. Even though most of those rate increases were kind of a one-time get things stabilized, there were some inflationary indicators in there as well. So we did have there are a couple of more inflationary rate increases already out there if nothing was to happen. But you can see that only generates, roughly $100,000 per year in capital needs. So you just end up falling further and further behind. And at the end of 2 years, you probably even need a bigger rate increase and take a lot of risks with the facilities and the fines. Next slide. This slide shows what the actual rates would be under the option B, which is kind of the reduced, which is the middle range phased-in approach. We're talking about rates, current fixed charge of $13.79 per month. It's $27.58 in the bi-monthly bill, but that would go up from a little less than $14 a month to $19 a month over 3 years, phased in. And the usage charges would phase in, tier one from $7 per 100 cubic feet to a little less than $10 per 100 cubic feet. And again, as I mentioned last time, 100 cubic feet is about 750 gallons. People don't normally think in that unit of measurement. So at the bottom, I show what kind of the average rate is, kind of the middle tier rate and what the commercial rate is per 100 gallons. Your current rate's $1.23 per 100 gallons, that would phase into $1.69 per 100 gallons, or about 1.7 cents per gallon. And as folks know, you pay a fixed charge regardless of any use. And then if you're a homeowner here, you pay usage rates according to three tiers, the first two units, or first four units bimonthly at the lowest level. Then as your use increases, you pay a little more in reflection of the cost of service at higher levels. So moving on. This puts it in long-term perspective, what a typical bill has been going back to the 1990s. No rate increases for, a decade, followed by the small rate increases. Two things are happening. One is rate increases, and the other is the usage is changing. So we try to model both in to reflect what a typical bill is doing. And you could see, with the rate increases, things went up. People cut back their water use by, 40-plus percent during the drought, even as some rate increases were kicking in. And so the bills went way down if people avoided the penalties. And then with the last rate increase, you've taken a few steps. You immediately bumped them up to $30, and then $35 and $37 where they currently are. And what's being proposed is to keep on that trajectory for a few more years. And then after that, we're looking at more inflationary rate increases in the long term, according to the financial projections. So yes, it's a big increase these years, but you put in a long-term context, the typical bill is going up from $16.30 to $51. It works, but it's over a long time frame, almost 30 years. It equals the 1993 bill, plus if you had escalated rates at 4.32% per year. It's just what the math worked out to be. So yes, it's higher than inflation, but it's not that much to get you with what we're proposing under the scenario B. Moving on, sustainable water facility. Next slide. I already mentioned the study was done in 2014. It was just based on preliminary cost estimates. And we're finding a couple of problems with the current sustainable water facility rates. One is the operating costs are higher than the bare bones minimums the engineers had estimated before the facility was even built. There's been some good news. The project costs came in a little bit less than anticipated, and the district was able to get some grant financing to fund some of that. So the debt service is lower than what we had originally estimated. However, the operating costs are higher. And the second problem is when we originally implemented these rates, the thoughts were, hey, well, we need rates for the ongoing debt service repayment and basic maintenance of the facility. But also, on those occasions when we do have to run the facility, there was kind of some additional quantity charges that would kick in. The problem is it's hard to know when to kick in those quantity charges. Sometimes it might happen mid-cycle. And a lot of times, from talking with Bob and other staff, the district may not want to operate the facility until it's absolutely necessary due to the cost of operating. It's additional cost for the brine hauling. It's there in case you need it in case of emergency. But if it's not an emergency, why would you run it if you don't need it? And you wouldn't, so sometimes the facility, you might hold off on running that and maybe go through the whole summer without turning it on, even though that's when your peak use is, and then realize that your aquifers are in bad shape and you better get that thing running. So you might not kick on the facility till September. So it's kind of weird trying to charge people in September, October, when part of the reason you're running it is due to all the use in the summertime that drew down the aquifers. So it didn't seem like it was easily to apply those emergency rates. So under the new proposed rates, what's being proposed is kind of rolling it into one ongoing rate, and I'll get into that in a second. Let's go to the next slide. Let's even go to the next slide. So, you know, we developed the financial projections. We're incorporating the base operating needs, and we rolled in, as I mentioned, the 2 months of emergency water operations operating costs into these rates. Now, right now, there's zero fund reserves. The facility is essentially operating at deficit mode. We included 2 months of O&M in there kind of as an average. And at the very least, you know, even if you don't run the facility for a couple of years, at least that could be used to build up a little bit of operating reserves in case you did need to run the facility. You'd have some funds to run it more than a couple of months, 1 year. On the other side of the coin is you need some capital investment into that facility as well in order to be able to do the brine hauling and some other stuff. And as Bob mentioned, there are some other longer-term funding needs that are excluded from this rate study in the hope that they might not be needed or in the hope that you can get some grant funding and apply the grants to it. So our study only includes kind of the bare minimum capital funding. And then long-term, we just have $50,000 a year coming in for the capital needs. So moving on to the next slide. This is what the rates would look like. Again, we're, some of this is doing away with those temporary operating costs. You'd be looking at fixed charges are currently $13 bi-monthly. This is in the phased approach. Well, there's only one approach I have for this. So we're talking about $650 a month. When we were looking at the capital needs, we initially were anticipating a bigger bump up in year one, but based on the latest capital improvement program, some of those projects have been shifted a little bit to the next year. So actually what we're looking at now is phasing in a little bit slower and to a little lower level than what we're looking at here. And again, you've got usage charges that would phase in over the next 3 years. Let's go to the next slide. Oh, I've got all the impacts in dollar amounts at the end of this presentation. Sewer rates, similar story. Your sewer enterprise currently has no fund reserves. There's no funding for capital. You've actually had to borrow money from the general fund to keep things going and do some of the critical projects in recent years. Again, you've got aging sewer facilities, a lot of old pipelines, pump stations that are long past their prime and normal operating conditions, and you've got a treatment plant that hasn't been invested in significantly in many years that's got a lot of needs just to keep things bare bones minimum to keep things going. We're talking a capital program, as Bob mentioned, of right, he reduced it a little bit. You know, we had $9.5 million. He was able to shave off another about $500,000. So we're talking about $9 million over the next 9 years. There's going to be cost inflation on top of that also. Again, the phased-in rates we're doing don't fully fund all these capital needs. What they're designed to do, if we go on to the next slide, is you know phase-in funding to eventually phase $800,000 per year. And you're not going to get there next year because we're trying to phase it in gradually over 3 years, so it's not a one-time hit for ratepayers. So the goal is to phase into $800,000 per year. It's not everything that the district needs for their priority 1, 2, 3 projects, but it's going to be a funding stream that takes you substantial steps in the right direction. Might you have to reevaluate after 3 years and keep you know some smaller rate increases in future years? That's always possible. maybe not. Maybe things turn out a little better than anticipated. So we're not getting all the way there with this rate study, but we're taking substantial steps in the right direction. Then you'd come back and reevaluate. So I mentioned we did come up with a reduced rate scenario also. That phases into $600,000 per year over 3 years instead of $800,000. Next slide. Again, we came up with the three scenarios: front load the rate increases, phase them in, or even do a reduced phase in alternative. And let's go to the next slide. And these are what the percentages are. Your sewer rates are pretty low as far when I look compared to what most agencies I work for. I've worked for over 100 agencies all around California. And in some areas, the average sewer bill right now is, you know, $75 per month, at least in the Bay Area, because a lot of agencies there have already started investing in the infrastructure replacement, new treatment plants, et cetera. Anyway, so to get to $800,000 a year, you'd have to ramp up your sewer rates by 64% if you did a one-time increase. With the phased approach, we have a 20%, 18%, and 16% rate increase that's going to phase in the capital to $800,000 over 3 years. And then we have a reduced phased approach. It's a little bit less, 18%, 16%, 14%, and that gets you to $600,000 per year, understanding you probably still have a little more upward hill to climb. At the same token, you know, the district has two more 4% rate increases on the books, as I mentioned, but you're already in the hole. You just keep going further in the hole, even with these rate increases. So moving on to the next slide, showing what the sewer rates look like. Currently, there's a fixed charge and a usage charge based on how much you use. For commercial, there's three strength classes. If you're a restaurant putting higher strength wastewater in the system, you pay a little more than if you're a low strength office, for example. So we're talking right now, the fixed charge is about $30 per month, a little over 60 bi-monthly, and that would phase into $50 a month. The usage charge for a typical home is, for all homes, is $3.50 per 100 cubic feet, about half a cent per gallon. That would raise up to $5.75. So yes, it's a significant increase, and I'll show you what the actual numbers look like in a little bit. Let's move on to the next slide. And this, again, same with the water slide, puts it in historical context. No rate increases, small rate increases for, you know, 20 years, a cut back in usage during the drought, and even though things have rebounded, they're not going back to where they used to be. With the last rate increases, you know, the typical customer using 6 units bi-monthly, 3 units per month, is paying about $41 per month on average. That would be going up under proposed rates B to, what have I got there? About $67 per month, which is what I'm seeing in many other communities are already there. Again, it's a big increase, but when you put it in context, it's the 1993 bill plus a little over 3% cost escalation. Moving on to the combined impacts. Next slide. Again, we're trying to phase stuff in with the phased approach. The goal is to support covering the cost of service, which include capital needs. We think with these proposed rates, we know they're going to put additional burden on folks, and you've got a lot of folks who are on fixed incomes. To that, I will say, I don't know what's the option, not doing the projects and letting your system fall apart and getting fines. You're going to end up paying more in the long run. The other thing is the district has a low-income discount program. I think it's 40% of the sewer rate up to the first 12 units. There's not a corresponding one in the water rate, but that's a pretty high discount from what we see. Probably only about a quarter of agencies out there have a low-income discount around California. Some agencies have some legal issues with it. Other ones have never implemented it. So there is some help, but it's still going to be a big impact on anyone. We understand that. At the end of the day, we expect even with these rate increases, your bill is going to end up on the low end compared to your surrounding coastal communities. And you could always reevaluate in a few years. The moral of the story for all these rate increases, agencies that have done less in the past have to, you know, face having to do more later on, which is kind of the step where you are now, versus had there been, you know, 3, 4, 5% rate increases every year over the last 20, 30 years, you'd be paying, you wouldn't need as much rate increases, but people have been paying more every year. So that's not necessarily a good thing that the district would have done from a financial perspective, from the ratepayers' perspective. Oh, next slide. Here's where we show the dollar amounts under the scenario B phased approach. Right now, the monthly equivalent water rate for a typical homeowner, $37. That raises to $51, about a $14 increase over the next 3 years. The emergency water supply project, currently typical home pays $12.50 per month on average. That's going up to $18 under the proposed rates. But at the same time, we're eliminating those additional surcharges. The sewer rates going from $40 to about $67 over 3 years. So all combined, we're looking at monthly rates going from about $90 up to $136 if everything was fully implemented according to the schedule. Yes, it's a big increase, $136 a month for water and sewer. You know, it works out if you just average it, you know, $67 a month for water and sewer. That's already what a lot of agencies are paying. But moving on to the next slide. The first, can we go back one slide? The first slide is what if you did, this has the one-time big rate increase, so you'd get there next year. The second slide, you're still getting to almost the same place, pretty much exactly the same place over 3 years, but it's phased in. And then the next slide, so it's a bill, let's go back one. Oh, okay, move on to the next slide. This is showing under scenario B, the combined current rates and what the rates would be next year. The first step is the biggest step of the rate increase under scenario B. Moving on to the next slide, we show scenario C. This is with the even further reduced rates over the next 3 years. Instead of getting to 136, it gets to 130. So it's a little bit less. It's not a lot less. Yet you're really you're not getting to where you probably should be going with your capital needs. So it's really still falling behind on the capital projects, but it does save about $6 per month over the next 3 years. And then I just said the next slide shows the survey with your future rates for next year, which again is that's the first step. It's a little bit bigger step. It's a little bit front-loaded compared to everyone else's current rate. This isn't necessarily fair because we know Morro Bay, Avila Beach, some of these other agencies, some have already adopted rate increases for the next 2 years and not insignificant. Avila Beach has got a 10% water rate increase and a 25% sewer rate increase that are going into effect this upcoming July. Who else we got in here? Los Osos has already adopted a 25% water rate increase over the next two fiscal years. Morro Bay has already got a 19% water rate increase over the next two fiscal years and is looking at funding for their brand new treatment plant, which is not going to be cheap. So moving on, this chart kind of shows the alternatives. Here's the current rates, and here's where they are, again, for kind of the typical home under the three scenarios. A, do it all at once. This is for next year's rates. B, the phase-in, and C, the lighter phase-in. And it kind of shows what the total bill would be for each for typical customer each year over the next 3 years under the three approaches. I'm just going to move on. Maybe folks have questions about that later. So really, what are we hoping to get out of the board and out of these meetings here? The district needs to raise rates. You know, it's a matter of how much, how soon. So we need to identify, before the district can move on in the process, you know, what level of rate increases is the district going to move forward with? And you're going to have to come back in a few years and reevaluate and, you know, move forward with the public hearing and stuff. But maybe that's not so much the point of this meeting. The district has a board meeting in a couple of days. We'll be going to those issues as well. But anyway, I'm going to end it there. And
we're going to have questions in just a minute. I've got some folks that turned in slips, and then we'll take questions from the audience. So are you?
Let's turn it over to questions. And
you're not
comments.
Off the hot seat yet, though.
No,
don't go anywhere.
And we've got all the detail here if people want to get into the detailed questions.
So, and again, if you would be respectful and, like, keep your questions to questions so that we can get as many folks' questions answered as possible, that would be great. I don't want to have to get the hook and pull somebody off of the mic. We're going to start with Donald Archer, followed by Don Howell.
President Rice and members of the board.
Pull the mic up a little bit so we can hear you.
I don't even, is it on?
Yep.
Okay. Okay. This is probably more philosophical, and I'm not sure if it is appropriate for this meeting, but I'll do it fast. I suggest that we press the pause button and take some deep breaths. We seem to be in over our heads. The CCSD keeps pouring hard-earned and limited resources into a bottomless pit. We are stuck in the mud with our feet on the accelerator, only to become more mired. The CCSD board and administration have acted as if they have had an endless line of credit, and this is primarily regarding the EWS. And we, the community, are now left footing the bill. We talked about this, many of us in the community talked about infrastructure improvement before the EWS ever went through, and we were more interested in infrastructure than we were in the EWS. We live in an increasingly complex, technologically dependent, and unbelievably rapidly changing world. The solutions we come up with are all too soon obsolete, including water treatment facilities. Because of this complexity, we all seem to be amateurs, including the CCSD administration and board of directors. We are left to rely on professionals, experts, and specialists, consultants, lawyers, contractors, public relationers, lobbyists, bean counters, and various snake oil peddlers, none of whose services are cheap, and all who presumably know better than we, and who we trust, are working with our best interests in mind. But being amateurs, how can we be sure that those we hire are as competent, experienced, objective, and honest as they purport to be? We have found in a number of cases that they aren't. On top of all this, money keeps talking, in fact, screams. The more money, the more din, the more clout. The district's rate increases, debt obligations, and expanding budgets are going to leave those of us without deep pockets out in the cold, to the detriment not only of ourselves, but to the detriment of this special and unique community as well. And what is this community, Cambria, going to look like by July 2020, when all the proposed increases, and undoubtedly more, are to be implemented? Who will be here and who won't? Please press the pause button, take some deep breaths, lift your feet off the accelerator, and regroup. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments. Don Howell, followed by Crosby Swartz. I'm going to have my timer on, but I don't think any of you are going to need it, so.
Thank you. Don Howell. A couple of questions, and I'm going to insert an opinion or two, but I'll keep it quick. I'm sorry. Is this better?
Yes.
Uh-huh. Okay. You referred to the, speaking of the last rate increase, or rather not the last one, the last one I voted for, which was for the EWS, that one that I didn't vote against. What was the preliminary estimate that supported that rate increase? I'd like to hear that. Do you have that on hand?
You mean from the last rate study?
No, the rate study where it was said that we're going to run out of water if we don't approve the rate increase.
I do think I've got that in here.
You said it was based upon data, which turned out to be not.
The original rate, yeah.
I mean,
yes,
that's what I'm interested.
There were good faith estimates made at the time for what the facility might cost and what the operating cost
would
be.
Yeah, I'm just curious to know because,
yeah,
you know, that's what we thought it was going to cost, you know, and now we're being told this cost $9 million plus.
Yeah, I've got.
Well, so it's just good to know what we started with.
Let me find. I think I brought these old studies here just in case we need them.
Well, there you are.
And I've got it right here. Emergency water supply charges.
I hope someone's writing this down because I don't have my pencil here.
And, you know, I'm happy to provide information after this as well, too. You don't have to get it all right here. Okay. Yeah, it's taking me a second to dig this up. We assumed. Okay. Okay, these are the water. here we go. Okay. We had assumed for the emergency water supply charges that, you know, annual debt service would be about $800,000 per year, plus we had a contingency of $160,000, plus facility maintenance costs at the time were projected to be almost zilch, $50,000 a year, so about $1 million per year total for the costs, and no additional capital. And that's what those charges were based on, was getting something in place immediately so you can secure the financing and hopefully secure some maintenance. So about $1 million.
Thank you.
Yeah, sorry it took a little while there.
No, that's okay. Yeah, it's a long time ago. And you're referring to, there was a, I forget the slide, but you're talking about the water rates and that the your calculations are based upon existing customers. Do I get that correct?
That is correct.
Therefore, it presumes no new connections.
Yeah, we didn't want to assume growth, but if growth does occur, I mean, that's a drop in the bucket in the big picture. But that you're exactly right.
Well,
we assumed no growth.
I just wanted to get clear about, because of course, if you add new connections, that adds expense as well. So, okay. I'm trying to separate the opinions here. Oh, okay. Just to you speak about inflation and that the rates need to be set such that they will cover inflation. The one thing I'd like to point out, and which I believe that many people here may be experiencing, is that wages are not rising at the same rate as inflation, and those of us on Social Security can basically say the most we can ever expect is 2% a year. So it's not really helping us a lot to assure us that, oh, it's just inflation. The fact is some of us are already at the limit, and you know, and if you don't have another dollar to spend, it doesn't matter, you know.
Yeah.
Okay, so having said that, I'm kind of wondering, I would like to have seen in the rate study, and perhaps it can be modified, to provide in the rate some way of accumulating money to support low-income users so that they don't have to leave the community. For example, if you're right now getting a 40% aid on your sewer bill and the sewer bill doubles, you're still getting the aid, but it's no longer the same amount of money. Now, if I've got my family a 6 or my family a 2 and I'm already at the limit, it means that to pay for my sewer, I'm going to have to either not eat or not buy my pills, or something else. So that's an important thing that really ought to have been considered, and I'd love to see that. Having said that, I do think the study was very well put together. I admire the work on it, clearly, as I do have some problems with it, though, and that was one. As regard to the EWS, I really do not buy the logic that it's easier for you just to bill for 2 months of operation, whether you run it or not. We haven't had problems in the past when it was operating and it got billed for. People like to know that today we're paying for our very expensive university emergency water supply because thank goodness we're in an emergency and thank goodness we have it. Now, if you hide that charge, people are not going to see that, and after a couple of years, it's just not. So we've got an incredibly expensive emergency water supply. Maybe it's a good thing, but we'll never know if you hide the cost. So I don't see that it has gives us that much of an operational advantage. I think you'd have a lot easier time selling the rate study, the rates, if you excluded that, or at least kept it as it is. If you it's too late to ask you to revise your charts, but the allocation for a standard family, unless they go to the CCSD and say, hey, I've got more people living in my house, is 8 units every 2 months, not 6.
Yeah, that may be the allocation, but when we look at the water use data, we see
I know that,
about two-thirds, almost 70% of your customers, residential customers, it's 6 or less.
Well, I would take
some are more.
Yeah, well, some are more, and those are the people that are going to get
30%
hurt.
30% or more than 6.
I just thought that your calculation for those of us who are really concerned about how the rates are basically going to at least go up by 30%, that it should be based upon what people are actually paying, and many of us are, in fact, paying, you know, 8 units, not 6. So
you're bringing up a good point, and we have a whole, you know, I forget, 50, 60 tables that was also in the board packet. In there, we show the impacts on customers at a number of different levels of use,
you
know, like 2, 25, you know, 20. So there's the whole range is in there. Just to keep things boiled down, we only showing like the typical home here. But you're right. There are some folks that a lot of families may use 8 or 10.
Yeah,
In these coastal communities, we typically see, you know, if there's not any outdoor irrigation, that folks are able to keep the water use down to pretty low levels. But, and folks change every month. There's no such customer that uses the same always. It kind of goes up and down.
Right. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments. Crosby Swartz, followed by Christine Heinrichs. And I am going to take people coming up once we get through the folks that's turned in a slip. So,
thank you, Madam President. I am Crosby Swartz. I like the previous comment about taking a deep breath, pausing, and taking your foot off the accelerator. A lot of these rates are driven by capital improvement projects, and it's not clear from looking at the rate study exactly what is included in these. We're lucky to have two fairly new standing committees, the Rate Committee and the Infrastructure Committee. And I don't believe they've really had a full opportunity to go over the capital improvement recommendations or the rate study. And I think it would be a mistake to try to send out a Prop 218 notice until they've actually completed their work. I could be wrong on that, but I was at the last Finance Committee meeting, and I don't think they got through everything that they were hoping to. There could be some savings there. Another problem that I have, which you've heard this from me before, is the eliminating of the SWF operating surcharge. The actual costs of operating this can vary all over the place from zero to typically in the hundreds of thousands of dollars per year, and it could go up as high as $2 million a year. And it just doesn't seem to be any way to recover that fairly unless you have an operating surcharge. The actual cost using the hauling and electricity and testing figures to operate the facility is $348,600 per month. That's a 24-hour-a-day operation. And as you get toward the end of a dry year, you could very easily be having to operate this full time and racking up $348,000 a month. It's going to take you a long time to recover that at $160,000 a year that's in this study. We just heard something new tonight also that they're proposing to use one of the existing tanks that they have there to collect the waste product. If you're generating $54,000 of gallons per day of waste product, I think you're probably going to need some more tanks. So that's another expense that doesn't seem to be in here anywhere. So anyway, I would hold off, let the standing committees do their work, and I think you'll get a better chance of getting a good product and more support from the community.
Thank you for those comments. Christine Heinrichs is next. I just wanted to state that the Ad Hoc Rates Committee did dig into this pretty significantly, and the standing committees do provide for public input, which is important, and I definitely take that suggestion under advisement, and we'll make sure at the board meeting that we have a discussion about whether or not that's going to be the case. But that's going to be... I don't want you to think this was just done by staff and the consultant. Director Beringer and I did spend a fairly significant amount of time working through some of the deeper details on the... Thank you.
Christine Heinrichs. The reason the Cambria can't afford the water and wastewater maintenance and improvements is because the board spent so much money on the emergency water facility. I'm not sure what numbers you were looking at when you said that it didn't cost as much. In fact, it went far past the costs that were explained to the community, which is originally $1 million, then $4 million. The CSD board eventually borrowed $9 million. We did get a grant, but the project cost more than that, so that four point something $1 million went to the excess costs of that. So this plant has cost far more than was ever dreamed of, that was at least told to the community. The continuing expenses have been much higher than was ever anticipated or described. They're running about $1 million a year. Our general manager always says, well, these are unanticipated costs. I'm not sure why they were unanticipated. That is the job of the staff to anticipate this, and this whole project has been financially out of control since the very early days. It's a result of poor decision-making in the past. As you've pointed out, this maintenance has been deferred many years, and then it was deferred again in favor of building this expensive capital project, and now we don't have money for that. If we had replaced the water pipes back then, we probably wouldn't have needed any more water. We've witnessed many water pipe breakages. One community resident who's very sharp with figures calculates that we're still losing 18% of our water that has been produced but remains unmetered. That alone would make a big contribution to us to supplying the needs of the community. The board asked for and got rate increases a couple of years ago, but few of the improvements that were scheduled were made. With the Stewart Street tank still has not been addressed. Well, it's been given some repairs, but this was supposed to be replaced like in 1990. So this has really been, and I appreciate that these things can't be kicked down the road, but we've been doing this, and now Cambria is being asked for more money to pay for projects that they were paying for that never got done. We still have many of those same problems. I feel the board is not handling the expenses responsibly. This rate increase is also being rushed to the public, as others have pointed out. We haven't had time to really evaluate what the impact is going to be on individual families, on Cambrians, and how this is, what projects can we now expect this will actually pay for? Oh, let's see. Emergency costs versus costs for growth. This is now, as you've noticed, not called the emergency water plant, although that's the only permit it has, is as an emergency project. It's called the sustainable plant specifically so that it can, I'll just go a little more, so that it can be used to pay for growth. This is a serious issue. It's a policy question that needs to be really discussed within the community, whether it makes sense for Cambria to grow when we don't have enough water for the existing population. The idea that somehow we'll get more money in rates by increasing water use is just not 21st century thinking. Everyone's got to be conserving water all the time. This is the new normal. So, let's see. Anyway, I guess that covers what I've got for now. Thank you very much. This is an interesting opportunity. I appreciate it.
I just wanted to go back just one on the surcharges, the charges, the operating charges that are on your water bills now. One of the things that we had a discussion about, the rates ad hoc committee, along with the staff and the consultant, was what is the difference between the required maintenance, which includes all kinds of regular testing and various monitoring things that have to happen with that thing when it's not even running. And those things don't change. And if we're not using it every year, what's the difference between the off operating costs and the on operating costs? And can we just smooth that over? Now I hear we talked through that, and I hadn't considered, me personally, I can't speak for Director Beringer, but I hadn't considered that it is one way that people know whether it's on. But there's also the complications that Mr. Handler's was discussing about when do you put the charge on? Do you put it on when once it's gone 60 days and the injected water is actually coming out of the wells? Or do you turn it? Do you start charging it when you turn it on, but you're not yet getting the benefit of that water, but you will in the future? So the attempt, and being a former teacher, I got paychecks all year round, but I worked 9 months. I didn't get paid during the time I was off in the summer. They just spread my checks out over the entire year, so I got less per month. So that was kind of where I was coming from, and the committee did have a discussion about that. And I do want to make sure to let you know that we will have, as a board, have that discussion about whether to have that charge on or not. But it is something we did consider and discuss, so it's not something that was ignored, just so everybody's aware of that. It seemed like it made more sense to go that direction. Really quick, and then we've got Christina Tobin.
Oh, the majority of the operating cost is the hauling and disposal cost. So you need to start charging that as soon as you start hauling and disposing of it. Right. Otherwise, you don't have the funds.
Thank you. Thank you for making that point. Christina Tobin, followed by Tina Dickinson.
Hi, I recently launched my second online petition. The last one was in support of Amanda Rice becoming president, and this one I was asked by the community to launch. We have over 140 signers. It states that the CCSD proposes the water and sewer rate increases, that the CSD has ignored the water and sewer system maintenance and upgrades in favor of constructing an expensive desal plant to allow them to lift the building moratorium to add new residents, the emergency water plant, which does not yet have a permit to operate and is under cease and desist order for violations, costs $1 million a year, even when it's not operating, has not been operating since 2016. The district hopes for it to operate later in 2018. The district certainly needs money to replace leaky pipes and water tanks. However, its focus has been to taking care of business. The board and staff have turned their attention to finding new water so Cambria can expand. And for people to sign this petition, if you think Cambria should focus its money on needed improvements for the current residents rather than expensive desal, expensive project that is, that shows little benefit for Cambria's present population. Background of it, the rate increases makes living in Cambria more expensive for residents who are on fixed incomes. They make it more difficult for young people, families to settle here. Signers, all from Cambria. Joseph Berkman states this increase hits our oldest and most vulnerable Cambrians the hardest. In no uncertain terms, I find this increase unwarranted and without cause. Claudia Berkman, I oppose a water and sewer rate increase. Sarah Rosso, I disagree with this increase. Susan Gardner, we can only afford to stay part-time because the utilities are so costly now. Linda Meyer from Cambria, Lucy Ryan, Donna King, Douglas King, Israel from Cambria, Sherry White, last chance to keep our young families here. Raise the water rates and they will all be gone and this town will die. Nanyali Mendoza from Cambria. Brad Bailey, Jill Knight from Cambria, ridiculous. Someone is going to get a pay raise, right? Jody Swanson from Cambria, Amber Atkinson, Bryn Albanese, Lorraine Witten, Marilyn Figbicorn. Apologize if I misspoke of your name. Kathleen Conway, I think the raises for Jerry Gruber have been obscene, as well as the horrendous loan for emergency water system we can't use, so now our rates have to increase. Barbara Webster, retired and dependent on Social Security, as so many of our friends, we need water for us, not for expansion. CCSDS failed to reopen the emergency water plant, which was scheduled in 2017. Dots, 2018, James Stannard, Vanilla Ellis, Nancy McDonough, we pay too much now. Darlene and Ron Wadsworth, no one will be able to afford to live here, but the very rich, I want to be able to flush my toilet and take a shower when needed to grow my own veggies. The tourists don't care about our water problems. Scott Manning, Robert Fountain, Janny Metti, Jeremy Cantner, Michael Lass, Janice Hudler, all from Cambria, Brianne Arastia, Theo Marino, Lucy Marino, I have lived here 38 years and still the water situation sucks. Shame on you. Judith Larmore, Tori Thompson, Michael Lomelli, the CSD needs to be replaced. No rate increases. You people are no more than thieves. Kate Hapworth from Cambria. This is a crippling hike on low-income families with water bills as high as they already are. Terry Harrington of Tula Yoga, better administrative decisions, get rid of overpaid management. Joni Kemp, enough is enough, you should be ashamed. Cheryl McDowell, Nancy Merrifield, Nancy Parenti, Margaret Kramer, CSD is bankrupting our community with their selfish acts of horrendous that got caught off. Glenn Bennett, what happened to the emergency water system on San Simeon Creek Road? As I recall, it's just one of the things that you had to have at our expense. I think this community would be way ahead of the game if we simply paid you to do nothing. Ann Bennett for Camry, and Camrys have done much as they can to keep our water use down. We're among the first places in California to do so. Now the CCSD wants to raise our rates again. When will enough be enough for them? It's not fair to raise the rates again. We have given so much as we have. Pay more to have less. Sherry Bell, no more taxes, no more fees. Instead, how about across the board budget shuts, an immediate hiring freeze, repurposing the boondoggle of the water facility for the Cambrians, what Cambrians intended, an emergency water facility to be used in case of emergency, which would free up millions of money for our failing wastewater plan. More importantly, replace the CCSD general manager and engineer and vote for common sense, fiscally responsible directors in November. Jeff Palmer, Leslie Flood, Audra Killick, the CCSD needs to prove to us this is necessary. Rochelle Sutherland, all from Cambria. Hattie Pearson, why do the citizens of Cambria have to pay for all the errors made by the CCSD? Charlotte Rees, maybe they should consider a salary decrease to compensate for their mistake. I agree. Catherine Ryan Hyde, pay it forward. The mismanagement by the CCSD is epic. We are stuck with the bill. Raul Sandville, Stephen Fingler, Kristen Lopes, Joseph Lipp, Christina Lynch, Claudia Worthen, no more misappropriation of our money. Sean Bozbun, Patricia Doran, these continuing rate increases are unsustainable, irresponsible, and unnecessary if the CCSD would manage utilities and infrastructure effectively and competently with our current tax base rather than draining the coffers, dry in pursuit of another gold rush. We could all live here comfortably and affordably while still caring for the residents, the village, and the natural world that makes our home such a unique and magnificent gem. Melvin Doran, enough of fiscal responsibility being subsidized by Cambria residents. Anthony Church, mothball the EWS, but maintained for emergency use only. Sue CDM Smith, that is, for a failure to construct a plant that complied with the regulatory authorities. Serenity from Camberty, that's a beautiful name. Rita Burton, enough with the rate hikes already. CCSD is bleeding many Cambrians dry. The emergency water system should have never been built. It is a complete fiasco. Typical CCSD mismanagement. Penny Church, these rate hikes are ridiculous and will ultimately drive many people away from Cambria. Kit Maddie, Donald Archer, whom we heard here today. Mindy, Gail Stevens, Mary Webb, rate increases of 47% for water and 71% for sewer. That doesn't include all the other rate increases they've already received these past 5 years. These rates will never pay for their new water project, a project they built for growth and not for residents. Calvin Fernandes, Ted Keys, this is what makes... Ken from, this is what makes sense regarding the stop the hike. Ken.
Are you close to done? Because I've already given you six.
I know. I thank you so much. I'm just speaking for
others. I understand that. I just want to make sure that we also get the questions from the rest of the folks that have questions.
I think I have another thing in there for later, right? Because there's four more pages.
So let's get some questions. Let's get some questions, and then we'll
yeah,
at the end.
Yeah, thank you for the extra time. I just wanted to let you know a lot of people
them.
That aren't
That's
here today.
That's why we're having the town hall tonight, to hopefully alleviate some of those concerns about whether we're spending the money appropriately or not, be clear about
right.
That's part of why we're doing this, and it's part of why we're trying to make sure that the participation is here. Thank you. She did 140.
The very last one is from Sean Williams, Lose the Losers 2018.
So next up is Tina Dickinson. And that's the last paper slip I have. So if there's other folks that want to that have questions that they want answered, probably we'll let Alex answer the questions that have been asked so far, too. I don't want him to get too far behind on how many questions there are.
Okay, can you hear me, Tina Dickinson?
Mr. Handler, I remember very well the presentation you gave in 2015 for the five-year rate increase, which we are now in the third year of, and we received a rate increase of 4% on March 1st, and we have two more years to go. I recall what you said tonight. It was very similar to what you said in the times when you were here talking about rate increases in 2015. So, as I said at one of the recent meetings that you were at, are you not doing a very good job for which you are getting paid quite handsomely? Or is the district doing a terrible job at running the district or not being able to run the district? And I think the latter is more true than the former. I would say that in your presentation, I go back to when the district charged the ratepayers for 6 units of water included in the fixed rate, of which on my bill was about $21 or $22. 6 units of water in that fixed rate. I didn't see that up there tonight. So you need to look at that when you're doing your rate study. The other thing is, the district actually got a rate increase when it never imposed publicly by notice a rate increase when they lowered that 6 units to 4 units of water for the same cost. So let's not forget that we got a third less water for the same amount of money, and the district didn't have to supply us with that extra third, but yet they imposed that on us during the drought. So there are other factors that need to be considered here. When I look at, there are a couple things in this presentation. One is when you look at, boy, this is really hard. Can you hear? The revenue, let's see how I get this on. Okay, so the revenue, this highest column, is for the 2017-18 year. So to say that revenues are not going up doesn't make sense when this column indicates that they definitely have gone up. What I'm not finding in this packet are the revenues for wastewater. I don't see a chart that indicates where we are, where the chart is for wastewater. So why did we not receive that in this packet? I don't know who put this packet together, whether it was the consultant. What is the difference? We should have something similar. And the other issue is with this one, it shows where we had surcharges. Oh, golly, this is hard. But at the very top of these, you'll see this way, are when we had surcharges. It increased our revenue. It makes no sense to me that when we've been in drought years, or even not in drought years, that if you want to raise your revenue, for goodness sakes, charge people more who are using excessive amounts of water. That's sort of like a kindergartner could figure that out. I'm not getting it. So what do I say? I will tell you this. There's so much more to say, but it usually falls on deaf ears. But I did see that in the district's, on the district's website this afternoon, they posted, you can all go to their website, they've posted the 5 pages of guidelines for the submission and tabulation of Prop 218 protests. That's already on the district's website when we're supposed to be having a town hall for folks in the community to come and talk about the rate increases. But it seems that, hey, you're ready to go. I'm assuming by the 21st, you're ready to go, pass them, and on the 22nd, that rate increase will probably go out in the mail. And so, let's see. I don't have that with me, but well, let me just say, I do have it, but let me just say this. I have the Proposition 218 protest form all ready to go. All it's waiting for is the dates for the 45-day period. And I would say, Cambrians, stand up to this rate increase and do not give in. Do not cave in, because we've seen with these rate increases, we've been promised all of these projects will be taken care of. They're not. We cannot afford the EWS. The regional board president said, in July 2017... If I knew now what I knew, if I know now what I knew then, he said, well, they never would have received, that's the CCSD, a Title 22 or Title 27 permit for the facility. We cannot afford the facility. Board members on the regional board said a small town of the size of Cambria cannot afford such a project. And that's the bottom line. We're spending money on the EWS as if there's no tomorrow. But then we see what Mr. Handler has presented us because of the fact of the golden pot being emptied. Why? It's one thing. The elephant in the room is the EWS.
Thank you for your comments. I would like to say that one of the reasons why the guidelines are probably on the website was because we were having this meeting tonight, and it's our ordinance. It's not a change. It's part of our rules that the district... Because the notice hasn't been approved yet. That's why. But the process has already been put into place by prior year's actions. That's why, because we wanted people to have it available. And this is the very beginning of a process to inform people, because we do need the rates, and I think a lot of people recognize that, but they want to make sure that they are going to get the projects that we have said that we're going to be doing.
Okay.
Because that's one of the things that I think it needs.
All right, fine. Then I would just say this,
out.
That I'm glad that I'm the one that brought it up. No one from CCSD did. So I'm glad that I informed the community that is on your website. Thank you.
Me too. Thanks, Gina. All right. Cheryl, did you still have a question?
There's two additional rate increases. Is that in the pipeline too? I mean, what are you going to do? Are you going to rescind the old rate increase?
Oh, this would supersede them.
So are you going to do an addendum at your meeting on the 28th to eliminate? And if it doesn't pass, then what are you going to do? If we do a 218 and we win, and you fail, what happens to those rate increases?
Well, I got to say, I think your whole community fails if these rates don't go through. It really comes down to, do you want to fund? I mean, you don't have to
believe. These increases are based on what the rates are right now, right?
It's your infrastructure. This is your community's infrastructure that's aging. It's in the ground. It needs investment. The district has tried to do the highest priority stuff from the questions I've had said before.
You've been paid well. Now we have to do our job, and we will.
It's not an us them thing, please. Yeah.
So let's let him answer the question.
Let me go back to answer some of these questions.
That is a good question.
I understand there's a lot of animosity towards rate increases, and particularly towards the emergency water supply project. I'm remembering being here a few years ago. There's a lot of controversy over the project. Someone brought up that the costs are higher but I said they were lower. What I was talking about is when we had done our proposed rates back in 2014. We had some engineering cost estimates that were higher than what the project ultimately came in on, but those numbers were already a lot higher than maybe some of the very preliminary numbers that had been put out there. If someone said $1 million, I wasn't around for that thing. I know that's very controversial. I do want to be clear, this project is not for growth. You have the district engineer. You need this for your own water supply. I mean, if you run out of water, this emergency water supply is not for growth. I don't know why there's that notion still out there. I don't even want to answer your own capital programs, but there were some good points brought up by people. One, and I'm sorry to disagree with some, but hey, slow down. And I'm going to tell you, the district did slow down for 25 years. You saw about 25 years of virtually no rate increases on the books.
Ms. Dickinson, can we please be respectful?
It is true. We went back and looked at the historical rates, and it's true the old rates, the base rate, included some water allowance in there that you didn't have to pay for the first 6 units of water. That was certainly factored into the chart. There's no trying to hide anything with these rates. Someone else brought up they want more low-income discount, and maybe that's something the district could consider. I've certainly worked with other agencies that have increased their low-income discounts. You have a 40% sewer discount right now. There's not a corresponding one on the water side. That's a very high discount, 40%. But these discounts cannot be funded by other ratepayer revenues. There are some legal requirements there, because the rates paid by one customer cannot be used to subsidize the rates by the other customer, unless there was some kind of voted, if people voluntarily contributed. Are there other sources of revenues, general fund revenues, that the district can put towards that? And, you know, maybe that's money that doesn't go to fire. I don't know. I will defer to the board on that. There was a notion that this stuff has not been reviewed. It certainly has. We've had meetings and conference calls with committees, with staff, for a number of months now, trying to fine-tune this stuff. The information is never 100% perfect. When Bob puts together his CIP, you know, he doesn't know exactly when he bids out a project and 5 years that it's going to be $150,000 or $180,000. So these are kind of good faith engineering estimates. And again, the rates we're recommending are not fully funding everything. We're trying to phase in a reasonable level of pay-as-you-go funding for an agency your size with your needs to, over a long period of time, address the infrastructure needs of a lot of your aging facilities. Someone mentioned that there's a lot of deferred maintenance due to the emergency water supply project, or that somehow sucked away money that could have been used for other water and sewer projects. And that's not true, because we adopted a separate charge specifically for the emergency water supply facility only. Had that facility not been built, those charges wouldn't have ever been levied. Could the district have adopted more water rate increases and sewer rate increases instead of that charge to generate more funds? Of course they could have, but at the time that was not what folks were looking at. And the district has done some of the stuff it was trying to do in the past. It's not like everything got postponed. It's just that there hasn't been enough funding to do what needs to be done. So it seems to, my understanding is, things just keep falling a little further and further behind. They've been able to keep the water and sewer utilities operating. You've got an old treatment plant. They're keeping it going. But these things do need investment over time. There was something that we should not assume that any increase in water use, and I wholeheartedly agree. We didn't assume any, rosy scenario that water use is going to spike back up. I mentioned that a few times in my presentation. We assumed what we've seen for the last fiscal year, the slight rebound from the low levels that were seen during the drought. That's probably a new norm for this agency, and that's what's cooked into our assumptions. The point I was making, if water use does increase more than what you're seeing at current levels, well, that would add additional revenues. It would add some additional expenses, but more, it would add more net revenues to the system that could be used to offset future rates. So that's something we've seen happen with other agencies in similar situations, but no one's promising anything, and we're certainly not making any kind of a rosy scenario with increased water use. Again, did the district ignore water and sewer just to pursue emergency water supply? It sounds like there's a sentiment among some folks like that. I know that, again, I think that's part of this animosity towards the emergency water supply. I don't even want to comment on it because I'm not that familiar with it. Money for growth, that somehow the district is using emergency water supply or using these rate increases to fund growth. This district hasn't had a lot of growth in recent years. We didn't assume any growth. It's just you've got old assets and infrastructure out there like all the rest of the agencies in California. You are not alone in this. I work for so many agencies facing similar challenges you are right now. Their treatment plants are 40 years old and have been held together with duct tape for the last 5-10 years. So many agencies need to rebuild the treatment plants, get a pipeline replacement program going, not to change out the old pipelines in 1 year, but to do it over a long time. So sorry if I'm rambling on some issues, but it seems apparent to me, but I'll defer to staff, that none of these projects are geared towards supporting funding for growth. I want to mention another thing, this notion of somehow the board just wants to raise rates. For what purpose? Of course, the board lives in this community. They're the ones who have to take the political brunt of any decisions they make. I can tell you they don't want to raise rates. They'd prefer to have no rates, but on the other side of the coin, what do you do with a system that needs major investment, that the rates, even though there have been some rate increases, you look over 25 years, it's been pretty minimal. What do you do? Not fund the infrastructure needs and let things deteriorate even worse? You're kind of caught between a rock and a hard place. There's some balance to achieve there. We were hoping to help you achieve that balance with kind of a phased-in approach. And there was a notion that the board's not being – that fiscal responsibility demands no rate increases. And I have to say that is a complete antithesis to everything I've ever seen in roughly 20 years of working for water and wastewater districts. It's the rate increases that are really the financial underpinning of the agency. If someone's got a problem with the operating costs, they think they're a little too high here or there, they're welcome to participate, go to the finance committee, go to the board meetings. But there's just not a lot of fluff out there. The district's been understaffed for many years. If you talk to the operators who are the guys in the field, I have, because they've been participated in some of our meetings before. So I don't know. There's no easy answer when you have to do these rate increases. It's hard on the communities because no one wants to pay anymore. What else? There was a question about surcharges temporarily increasing revenues. As Tina was pointing out, we have a huge pack of tables that show some historical numbers and show all the financial projections. And there are some charts we threw in there kind of showing the revenues. I was curious, how much did you actually receive in these surcharge revenues? And this is in the board pack. It's not in my presentation. It's just too much material to try to walk through everything. But after this, I'm happy to stay for hours if folks really want to get into the weeds with this stuff. But, yeah, there were some surcharge revenues that were taking place, some penalty rates that were put in place during the drought. The district did collect some additional revenues to help defray costs during the drought. As shown on that chart, it wasn't a huge amount of revenues. Why? Because many people went above and beyond normal conservation measures to get their water use down so they wouldn't have to pay the penalties. So some folks did pay penalties and maybe just for a couple of months and then stopped. And the reason there was the penalties in place is because you literally were in risk of running out of water supply here in the district after 3-year major drought. Maybe I'm rambling on too much.
No. I just want to.
The emergency water supply has been built. Some people may have not liked it, but my understanding was that it was needed to provide emergency backup had this drought continued, or in the future when invariably you're going to face another drought at some point. Does it need to be run every year? Hopefully not. But there are alternatives to how we would structure those emergency water supply rates, and it's. Some recommendation was brought up. Maybe you would have a separate surcharge that's only charged when it's running, or maybe when you think you're going to need to run it. And there definitely have been conversations behind the scenes with staff and with your committees on that as well, trying to figure out what's the best way to move forward here, because there's no easy way to go forward. You have to go from here to here. You should, arguably, if you had raised rates all the prior 25 years, you'd already been there. But that wasn't the case. You're facing the need to do steeper rate increases now. I tell agencies, the less you do now, the more you're going to have to do later. More now, less later. But what we're showing in our scenarios, scenario B, that phased approach, we'll look long-term, and the goal is that after you phase your rates into those levels, that you'd only need, inflationary rate increases in future years. Do we have a crystal ball? May there be some new regulatory requirement? Certainly, I've worked with a lot of agencies that, new arsenic regulations through, and guess what? You fail, you got to do a $20 million project. New wastewater permit requirements. You are on a coastal conditions here. You face stricter regulations than most agencies in the state. And I will cut it off there at the advice of someone here.
Could you just quickly address the, because I know you analyzed the levels. Somebody brought up the question of people who use way more should pay way more. Can you just address you said at some point 70% of the residential customers use less than 6 units. When we're going and talking about over 15 units, what percentage of the residential customers, do you have that number somewhere? Because I think that's kind of my instinct too. Is if you're using a huge amount of water, more of the burden should be on you. But the reality is, the number of customers that are using at that level is very small. it's a lot of water, but it's a very small number of customers, and you can't charge more than what it costs to deliver the water. And in reality, it's hard to make the rationalization.
You are under Prop 218, and there have been legal decisions that have rolled out over the years further and further defining what it means to be in compliance. The latest one was back in maybe late 2015. The Supreme Court upheld the decision by an appellate court that tiered rates were permissible provided you had a cost basis for them. So you can't just tier them however you want. You do have tiered water rates here in the community. You know, the lowest levels of use have the lowest rate, and as you keep stepping up, you pay a little bit more per unit of water. You also have tiered rates for the emergency water supply, so it's the high users who are going to bear a larger brunt of the cost of that facility than your lower water users. That's the way it was designed, and that's the way it's supposed to be going forward.
It seems to me they have a straight across.
Well, there's two things for commercial. Good point. One is for the regular water rates, commercial pays a rate that's roughly equivalent to the weighted average that the residential customers pay. So it includes some of the costs for peaking that are picked up by the Tier 3 residential rate, for example. So with the residential rate, you've kind of got a homogenous group. It's a lot of agencies have come up with tiers. But when you look at commercial rates, it's very challenging to come up with a way of trying to tier the rates because you've got such a wide array of customers out there. But with your emergency water supply project, there's kind of a different perspective there, was that, hey, you know, the more you use, the more you're going to have to pay, particularly if this facility has to be run because of, you know, high levels of water use during the tourist season here in the summer that's draining down the aquifer. So there's kind of a combination for the commercial water rates. And there, if you look at the way the emergency water supply rates are set up, the commercial rates, if it's a large commercial customer, they're going to be paying a lot more per unit than just a typical home that's out there. So that is built into the emergency water supply rates. Why? Because that project was necessitated by, you know, there's many different legitimate perspectives, but by kind of these aquifers being drawn down during the dry months, and if it happens year after year, I think it's legitimate to put more cost onus on the high users. The problem is, you know, how do you really charge these rates in a way, especially when the operations need to occur, that kind of corresponds with the high levels of use? And if you're not going to run the facility to September, it's hard to go back and charge it for, you know, July and August usage. Anyway,
I want to be respectful of everybody's time, and we did say it was going to be a two-hour meeting, which we're 10 minutes, we're just about exactly at, because we did start about 10 minutes late. But I want to make sure that there isn't anybody that has an additional question, and we need to keep them brief, but I do want to make sure that folks, so you can, if you just come up and
be very quick. Harry Farmer said, Al McKinnon should say something positive. And so I want to say that 12 to 15% water loss throughout the country and actually the world is reasonable. And I know a lot of people are anguished over that amount of loss that we have. It's typical, so for many reasons. I also want to take umbrage as the funding mechanism that was identified. We have several others. Remember state handouts or grants, as we call them. That's part of it, and it was a major factor in the way we kind of sort of balanced the books from what we had in the past. Also, water meters. Water meters, that's growth. But remember this, we are a water company and we sell water. And the one thing we don't do is sell a lot of it. Now we have Nipomo. They have 36 units per household that they versus our six. Oceano, a tiny little community, 20. We have six. That doesn't make sense. And what has truly happened is you've created another water company. It's called Windsor Water. And you think that that's the only cost that you're identifying for residents to pay for water. It isn't. because they're going out and they're buying a tank, $5,000, whatever, buying a new truck sometimes, and then paying a great deal of money to Windsor to get water to do their plants. And 80% of the use of water is for external use, not the inside use. So Windsor's making a bundle because you've created them. Now, the problem, like Nipomo, they have a flat charge. Just keep on buying. As long as you pay $4 or $5 a unit, you just can buy 100, 200 acres, doesn't matter. So maybe the business model is flawed. That's what I'm saying at this point. And one of the things that you should do, because some people, and I know some of my neighbors, they don't even see six. They see 30 units. They see 30 units. And with your draconian rates, you stifle it. They say, well, let's see now. If you keep it down here at level one, I'll just buy the water from CCSD. But as you quickly jump up to really astronomical numbers, they go and get it from Windsor. So that's a way of generating funds that you're not thinking about right now. And if you compare Templeton, look at what Templeton does. They're very similar to Cambria in size and responsibilities. With 17 people, $5.5 million budgets, they do 1,500 acre feet a year. Something's screwed up. And people have said it. And eventually, it's going to be in everybody's mind. You got to do something with the EWS. And I'll tell you another benchmark. If you want to create an acre foot of water through your desal system, through your reverse osmosis system, you have brine waste of, what is it? Like 260,000, something like that, gallons of water you got to get rid of. The largest truck that you can go to South County in, 6,000 gallons. It takes 54 trucks to take that brine waste. So there's no way that you can ever have a return on investment. It's the worst thing we've ever done. But we have it.
So we have to deal with it.
That's the thing. It doesn't matter what we say. But it was a horrible investment, and no one would have said, let's fund that as a project if they knew the consequences. The other thing, a desal system, Santa Barbara.
I want to stick to the rates, and we have a bunch of people waiting to ask questions.
Okay, this is the last
Do
point.
You have a question?
Santa Barbara, Carlsbad, it runs all the time. When you run a desal system or you run a reverse osmosis brine system, you got to keep it running. And when you don't, the maintenance cost goes skyrocketing on top of everything else that you don't want. So from that standpoint, well, I don't know the answer. But it's really a problem. And the use of that equipment should be looked at in different ways.
Thank you for your comments.
Does anyone know what Windsor water charges?
$0.03 a gallon,
and what were the rates here? Were if you add it all up, then you got to go haul it. I bet you it costs a lot more getting a truck hauling water from this Windsor Water Company than it does buying water here.
Yeah,
that's. But anyway, I don't. But that's not my. You know, I'm not familiar with the Windsor Water. But I heard about this in the past. Grants. And I guess in the past may have been more of a contributor to the funding. I don't know. I'll defer to staff.
We'll have to be working. We're working on that.
They have been going after grants. They're continuing to go after grants. They got some grant funding for the emergency water supply. No, it wasn't 100%, as maybe everyone would have hoped. And they're continuing to try to find ways to use what the allocation was, and they're going to be going after
future. Let's get to the other questions that we've got, because I do want to try and keep work. Go ahead.
Thank you. Rose Bedard again. Actually, I have a more detailed question on your report on page 12. You had mentioned a slight staffing increase in cost, but am I misreading this? I'm seeing almost $500,000 in increased staffing in the year to come.
There's a utility manager and a half an admin person in there.
So basically my question is, if there's no more growth and we're not increasing the need, you have no more new customers, why would we be increasing staffing?
So that's a very good question, and I want to have the general manager respond to that, because I think we do need to be clear about why we're asking for these things like the additional staff, and I'm not sure can you answer that in a brief? I don't have to turn the timer on you, do I?
Alex touched on it. One of the concerns that we have is turnover within the district, and as I talk to the guys out in the field, one of the most frustrating things that they have to deal with is the older system. When you can go to work for another utility system that has a comparable pay and salary, but a newer facility, it makes it much easier on them. Historically, the utility manager has been a position the district has, but it hasn't been filled in many years. I was the utility manager, and I stepped into the general manager position, and we've never filled the utility manager a position since I've taken over as general manager. Now, to be honest with you, that's a position that we can further evaluate, whether we have to have it or not. The other two positions that the man was referring to is related to the collection system. Going back again historically, if you look at the wastewater department, a component of the wastewater department is a collection system, which is the lift stations and the sewer lines and things like that. It's really almost a separate entity unto itself. At one time, the district had three people in that department, if I recall correctly, before my tenure here. And because of budget cuts and things like that, that position was done away with. So these proposed rates are asking for two people to be put back in that department to maintain our collection system, and then also to buy a Vactor truck, a newer Vactor truck. Our Vactor truck is really old. So we need to maintain our collection system. We need to, as part of our SSMP, we need to make sure that we're cameraing the lines, cleaning the lines, and repairing the lines when we find them that need to be. So the other halftime position that was in there was a clerical position that we decided that we don't need either. So we're willing to, look at those positions. But unfortunately, the collection system positions we really need to have. Now, we could phase those in over a couple-year period like Alex is proposing with the rates. We don't necessarily have to run out and hire two collection system people, although to a certain extent I would like to go ahead and get those people on board. John Elchin, who is our wastewater supervisor, they use the wastewater people to do the collection system work, which is spreading the staff real thin. So,
would you say that having people on the collection system helps us get our arms around the maintenance issues?
Yes, as it relates to the collection system itself, there's really two major components. There's the wastewater treatment plant and the collection system. The collection system, we have 10 pumping stations in town. Those are many of the things that are identified on priority one under Bob's list. So
does that answer your question? I hope.
I lost you about halfway through your
No, that's okay. Okay. That's okay. That's okay.
Because you started talking about trucks. I was talking about people.
Yeah.
And so I wasn't sure if you were referring to the trucks as these are the people that are going to drive the trucks.
You were asking about staffing, and then I identified the two collection system people,
correct,
the utility manager, and the one admin
correct
person staff. So then also I mentioned a Vactor truck in there, which
that's
is actually identified in the CIP list under priority one, which is a cost that's included in this rate study. So the Vactor truck is, $495,000 or so? Yeah. It's like from a capital improvement standpoint, it's like a new fire truck. That's the big truck you'll see driving around town. Ours is really old and needs to be replaced. And for us to maintain the collection system, we really need to have we really need to have a new one or a newer one. We could probably get one a couple years old, but it has to meet emission standards and all that
Apparently,
other stuff.
Apparently, I do have to put a timer
okay.
on you.
Okay, yes, ma'am.
We got a line right here.
I was sitting.
Oh, okay. You're allowed to sit.
John Martinez.
I'm trying to make sure you're not jumping the line, that's all.
I'm not.
Thank you, John.
I wish we would have got to this earlier. The first two people that spoke, Mr. Archer and Crosby, both spoke, and they said, put the brakes on this thing and take a deep breath. To me, that's the wisest thing we should do right now. I attended a few of those infrastructure and finance committee meetings, and they were really eye-opening. I also took the water plant tour, which was really eye-opening, too. You really see what's going on in this town? No, at the sewer plant off of Windsor. So
do you have a question on the rates? Because I don't want to go too much longer.
That we should not be posting a rate increase tomorrow or 2 days from now or whenever you legally can first do it.
I hear that.
So, and it's based on the fact that after taking that plant tour, one of the things that was there is we have a problem in this town with rags clogging up the machinery. So there's a little thing that catches those rags before they gum up the works, and it was purchased a couple of years ago. It's sitting out in the yard, not installed. So what that tells me is that this expensive machine, I don't know how much it costs, $10,000, $50,000. We're told it's going to cost $150,000 to put in, but it should have been $300,000, but they got a deal, but they don't have the money. So who the heck buys a machine and leaves it out in a yard, and it's sitting there open, exposed to the world, rotting away, uninstalled unless we get this rate increase? So that tells you the management we have. And also, we look at the planning, approval, bidding, and build process of the emergency water plant. Think about that. That's the people that are running the show right now, that's the report card. And so when you guys showed us this chart here that shows this chart where they say that 3.17% inflation, I Googled the consumer price increase since 1993. It's 2.2%, which means it's this number is 50% off. And I Googled it as soon as the words came out of his mouth.
I think that isn't.
So my question to you is uh-huh. If you guys are so careful about everything, I also went through this. So currently we're paying for sewer salaries $730. The projection is to go to $1.4 million. He just said two people or three people are going to be hired. For water, we're paying $839,000 for salary right now. The projection is $1.5 million. And then for the sustainable water plant, which I think is the name this week, or have we changed it? It's 130. We're going to go up to 270,000. So basically, another $1.5 million, $1.6 million for just salaries. Okay, $600 a year is what it's going to cost me more when these rates get in. It's going to be basically another $100 every 2 months. $600 a year, and there's
so
3,800 customers, $2 million plus a year that are going to be sucked out of our pockets that we're not going to spend at the restaurants in town, at the stores in town, at the grocery store. That's money that's going to go straight to these guys. And that water plant that is not working, that with some plastic pipes, Bob said, they can get it working in an emergency. That's the report card. I wouldn't trust them with my money.
Thank you for your comments.
Hello, President Rice. My name is Samuel Shalhoub. I'm school board president. I'm speaking on behalf of myself as a community member, however. Just a couple of questions, really quick. First of all, what's the economic philosophy behind not having a reserve in the budget? I think having a reserve is an important safety net. The other kind of question I'm wondering is your philosophy for assuming that the usage rates, as they dropped in the drought situation, that they won't recover higher. I think Cambria community is very sensitive to the environmental concerns. And I think a lot of their wider usage reductions were not so much trying to avoid higher rates, although of course that is a part of it, but rather was being fundamentally concerned about our environment and our aquifer, and that's where those why the reduction was so steep. And we were in fact very proud of ourselves, I feel, if I may speak for the community, that we were able to bring our water consumption down, and that is not something that we should necessarily compare to other districts in California, because we are being very conscious of our resources here, and that I believe our community should be rewarded for that, not necessarily punished in the ways that an increased rate might be perceived as. And then my following up question is there a philosophy for imposing surcharges on the highest water rate users or the highest water consumption users, in the sense that you're not necessarily changing the levels of use, saying, you know, 6 and 10 and 20, but rather just imposing a surcharge on those very few high consumers? And maybe that's a way to kind of offset the costs that would be passed down to our local residents, because I feel like the tourism industry is growing, and very positively so, in a way that our businesses need tourism to function. However, our local community doesn't have that luxury. We can't ebb and flow with tourism. So I think in terms of your philosophy for understanding the variety of these issues facing us, you have to think a little bit further beyond just these kind of strict levels. Maybe there are alternative solutions that aren't in these proposed actions, even though we have three actions to look at. Perhaps there are better options that can be developed with deeper input from the community. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Of the surcharge?
Of the surcharge on the high users.
Yeah, I mean, I guess, you know, under water code, there is a way of doing penalties for water conservation emergencies and stuff like you did in the past. But in terms of regular rates, you don't have the flexibility to just, you know, add a surcharge if you can't clearly define some higher cost that's associated with it. So for water rates, it's kind of hard to do that. For the emergency water supply, we certainly have that built into the rates that are already here, to the detriment of the high users and to the, hopefully the little bit of the benefit of the low users, although no one seems to like the emergency water supply project. I just want to make a side comment. I did just run the numbers on what the water rates would be in 3 years with all these proposed increases. And it's less than 3 cents a gallon. So whoever's buying people, I think at the time were buying water from this Windsor Water Company because they were facing the notion of paying high penalties during the drought. As I have vague recollection, that's where this whole thing started. And I'm remembering now a prior finance director saying, they're selling water for 3 cents. And I was like, that's not cheap. That's equal to, you know, $22.50
that's
per HCF. For non-potable water. So the water, if anyone here is buying water from Windsor Water Company, you can get a lot cheaper just by turning on the tap on your own house, and you could save the shipping as well.
We think we have
at 3 cents a gallon. Oh, one more thing. Yes, those rates showing the long-term thing, I'm not saying that's cost inflation. I'm saying it's roughly inflationary. Cost inflation for CPI has been a little bit lower over the 25-year period. I'm just showing what the compounded annual rate is for the bill from 1993 to where it is with the proposed. But the one thing I want to say, inflation for water and wastewater agencies is not the same as CPI. There are other indices out there that show utility inflation, and it's typically closer to, you know, 3, 4%, even when CPI is 2%. Because it's heavily, you know, staffing and capital intensive. You can't just switch from Coke to Pepsi or something like that. But I'm not trying to trick anyone. I'm just showing you what the math shows the compounded annual rate is. I got to make one more comment here, just because it's so pertinent, because I see this at so many agencies. There's a book that was written a couple of years back called Death of a Water District. It was called Death of a Water District. It was written by, I think, a manager we had worked with once before. It was the death of the water or death of a water agency, something like that. It's on Amazon. It's not the most exciting book out there. But what caused the problem was an agency that didn't want to raise rates to fund its ongoing infrastructure needs and pay its cost of service. These rates that are being proposed here, they're not designed to punish anyone. The board does not want to punish anyone. They've got to pay these rates too. They would love to say water's free. Unfortunately, there is a cost of service here. You know, if you were to cut staffing, you can get the rates down a little bit, but not a lot. The rates are designed to fund the cost of service, no more, no less. From my perspective, I'm coming here as an outside, kind of independent third party.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
First of all, I want to say, my name is Bruce Wagner. An excellent presentation. This is very good. I understand the hard work that the board and our consultants have done. And I just have a couple of questions. And I also realize that it's been over the last 4 or 5 decades that our water district has dropped the ball, and that's why now we have to pay the piper. Right now we have to pay the piper because the last 40 years our CCSD has dropped the ball. And we have to pay. But the question I have is this. You were projecting we need $7 million over the next 10 years for the water capital improvements. You're predicting we need, and this is a rough figure, $9 point something million for the sewer. Is there a figure for what we're going to need for the sustainable water facility over the next 10 years?
Yeah, there is. And what
you have
we
a guesstimate?
Yeah, there's about $500,000 included over the next 2 years, and then it's just $50,000 a year thereafter. Some of the other projects that are longer-term needs, those the district's hoping to use grant funding or you know some other kind of
so a couple,
funding for. So that's
let's
not
round it to $2 million.
Well, not even. If you take
okay,
50 times 9.
Let's just say $1 yeah. million. Yeah. So we have $7 million for water, $10 million for sewer, $1 million for the sustainable water facility. That totals up to $18 million over the next 10 years. And the water rates are taking us up to a level of $700,000 for the water.
Yes.
$800,000 for the sewer. That's $15 million.
It phases in, so yeah.
The
goal
just,
is you approach
just
that,
looking
over,
at the,
yeah, with, and that assumes future inflationary
yeah,
increases.
The
but
whole picture,
you're right. The goal
okay.
is that you'd be able to fund gradually
still,
fund this stuff over 10 plus
we're
years.
We're still underfunded, yeah. right? Am I right in saying that?
You don't have exactly every last cent that's identified,
thing,
but so you might need to address that with future rate increases. But at least you're taking on a big chunk of it
okay.
and getting a funding stream in place to hit the highest
the other way of
stuff.
Saying that is yeah. in 10 years we'll have more rate increases.
Well, no, because you've got an ongoing funding stream built into your rates to hopefully,
yeah.
you know,
but
once you
build enough, according to your figures.
Well, it'll give the district money to accomplish
well, I understand
almost
that.
All of what it needs to do identified in the CIP, and there'll be more stuff identified in the future. The point is that your rates need an adequate funding stream to address
that.
Stuff. You know, you might not be accomplishing 100% of everything exactly in 10 years. Maybe you're getting 90% of the way there, and there are going to be future needs. But you've got an ongoing payment stream in there, so even after 10 years, that payment stream would still be there is the goal to keep funding the needs as they keep coming up.
Thank you very much.
Yeah.
I want to thank everybody for coming out. And we've gone about a half hour over, and Mr. Handler said that he would be here to he's happy to stay and answer any additional questions you might have. I do want to make sure that anybody that wants to, this is going to be online with AGP as soon as they get it back to the office, which is the other reason why we need to be closing out the meeting. We will be having a discussion of the board on Thursday, beginning at 2 p.m., we've got a special meeting so that we can talk through some of the issues that were raised here tonight and with whatever other issues the directors want to make sure are covered.
I just have a couple of questions.
I'm sorry.
Well, I've been waiting, and four people stood ahead of me. So
I'm sorry, Claudia. It's 8:35.
They're just two little things. One of them is, what does Bartle and Wells get paid?
15.
$17.
Yeah, $17.03.
$17,000. $17,000.
To 50? Isn't it 50? I don't know.
Well,
35,000.
Sewer and sustainable water, and we only bill what the time and materials basis. So
at
the end of the day, what does it come out to be? Maybe it's in the 20 to 25 range. Is
$25,000? How much these big thick packets of papers? Is that including the $25,000?
We charge 10. No, yeah, that's included. Yeah,
that's included in the package.
Yeah.
Okay, that was one question. And then I have something really, really small, and it's kind of funny. But if you would turn the lights out on the sewer plant, you would save a whole lot of electricity.
Thank you for that suggestion, Claudia. I appreciate that. Thank you very much for coming. We are adjourned. Thank you.